Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we'll be talking about video games, board games, the timeless void between Christmas and New Year's. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Did you hear the music?
Yeah, I totally heard it. It was really loud.
Oh.
So I was trying to manually adjust
shit.
It.
Shit, you want to try it again?
You asked for it. No. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
It actually sounds great now.
Can you hear it?
In this episode, we're talking about video games, board games, the timeless void between Christmas and New Year's, and Zootopia 2. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm. I don't know. I don't know if you saw Zootopia 2.
I didn't.
Probably not.
No, I didn't. I liked the first Zootopia. I didn't watch the second one.
I mean,
it's still in theaters. It's only Disney's biggest hit since Frozen, I guess.
Wow. And I like Zootopia better than I like Frozen. The message of Zootopia I appreciate more than Sisterhood. There's just something about not having a sister that I don't give a shit about Sisterhood.
it just doesn't resonate with you the same way, systematic racism.
Yeah. As a cruise, Zootopia really, really nails it.
Oh, boy, are you going to like it when they talk about snakes in this next one.
Oh.
And how they were... kicked out of society.
Oh, shoot.
Hi, everybody. I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody. I'm Brandon. And welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm. We haven't recorded this show in probably a couple weeks, about a month, maybe a little bit over that.
I think it's only been 2 weeks. I think we only took 1 week off.
Really? It feels so long.
No.
It feels like forever. No, because we recorded the Swifflecast stuff.
We did record the Swifflecast, which we have to do the championship.
Yes.
Swifflecast.
Sure do.
After this, but we'll give it time. Shout out to the champ Bob who listens to this podcast. So we'll give you your praises here as well.
Yeah, hey Bob,
because I'm just gonna talk so much crap about you, Bob.
Yeah,
in the Swifflecast.
I think this right now we say honestly and with integrity, Bob. Good job on another win in Swiffle this year. We didn't think you were gonna make it, but you did it. Congratulations.
Based on how lazily you laid on that couch during the draft, mm-hmm. like housing chicken wings and
yeah.
beer, none of us thought you had a chance, but
nope.
Your commitment to paying attention to lots of sports and ignoring other obligations really paid off.
You got super fucking lucky, and I will repeat that on the next episode, the next thing we do. But good job, Bob. I'm going to talk so much shit next episode. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. This is the podcast where we talk to our mutual friend directly and do nothing else.
And he doesn't respond to us directly.
No. No, he'll respond to us in separate text messages.
What
most likely.
Add us to a single group text, dude. What the come on. Come on. It's 2025.
Come on.
It's almost 26.
All right. If you want to connect with us, if you want to add us to your group text, you can do that on Facebook at facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow. Email us apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. We're on Instagram at apathetic_enthusiasm, and you can go to our website apatheticenthusiasm.com. You want video versions? You want to see Brandon adjusting his video camera in real time while I do the social media stuff, you can go to youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And then if you want to support our podcast, you can go to patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Throw some money in the jar there and support our podcasting hobby.
It felt,
that's what
it felt
is.
Tilted. It felt tilted. My video felt tilted.
It looks good now.
All right.
It looks good to me.
Heck yeah. Heck, did you adjust it while you're talking?
I crop you out. Oh. You're not even in the video.
Nice. They say I've got a voice for radio. Oh, face for shit. I fucked it up.
A face for video. I have thought about redoing all of our overlays for all of like the video stuff.
Oh, 2026.
2026, new year, new me, new podcast,
heck yeah.
New live stream. No, we don't live stream this anymore.
Why was that a thought in your head to redo the overlays?
Well, you know, I do watch a lot of live stream content these days, particularly trading card related. And there are numerous times where we've recently changed how we do our video conferencing for this. We were longtime Zoomers, right? Longtime Zoomophiles. And then I notice a lot of people are using what we use now, Discord, to do their video chats. And so often, there are situations where people will add someone. Sometimes someone joins the live stream, they're like in the chat and they're like, hey, get in here, let's talk. And then they like add the person to the Discord call and then they add them to the live stream, right?
Yeah.
The layouts that we have in OBS, the open broadcast software, do not account for that. They don't allow for that because I've made overlays that go over the windows as opposed to having just a solid background that I could just put our video on. So essentially, that's a long way of saying I want to rework them so that we have flexibility, modularity, and the ability to add guests on the fly. Like, say we're doing a Swifflecast and the champion wanted to be part of the show. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like in very well with our current setup.
Huh.
I mean, I'd find a way.
Yeah.
Life finds a way. But you know, it's just something I was kicking around in the old noodle.
No, I think that's a great idea, man. I think, you know, I didn't think about it like that. I didn't think about it at all, actually, until you brought it up.
No, you weren't thinking about it. I was thinking about it.
But
how was your Christmas?
But that reminds me, I need to cancel our Zoom account so we stop paying for that. Yeah, so I'm going to do that while we're talking. How was my Christmas? My Christmas is pretty good. Go to billing management. Here's how I started my Christmas vacation.
Christmas vacation.
let's see. I had a Christmas party over at with my work friends. That was fun. And then Friday, the Friday right before, the week before Christmas, like we're still supposed to work, but like there's nobody in the office.
The week before the week of Christmas.
The week of Christmas, my work, we still work. Even on Christmas Eve, we're supposed to work.
Gosh, capitalism. Am I right, everybody? Leave a comment.
You're right, bruh. But anyways, the Friday before that, it felt like that was the start of vacation. Anyways, went to there's this band that's been around a long time, the Vandals. And they put out a Christmas album in 1996. They're a punk rock band. I think I've seen them like four or five times now, just in the last couple of years. So they do this Christmas album. They go on tour during a Christmas holiday, and they perform the entire album, and then all their other hits. And so I went last year with my friend Justin. And then this year went again. And so now it's like turning into a tradition to go see them every year. So that's what started it off. And so that was really fun. Then the actual week of work, like day one, I'm like, oh, I don't feel good. And basically from that point to today, actually not today. Today, actually, I feel pretty good. But like up until like yesterday, I'm like, are you sick? Are you sick, Brandon? I don't know if you're sick. You've you feel like you could go be sick, but you're not yet. Just be sick. And my body is like, no, we're going to teeter on the line. You're not going to know anything about how you're going to feel for this entire vacation. Christmas Day, Chelsea and Dexter, they were sick. Also, when I was at the Vandal show, Chelsea was like, oh yeah, Dexter went to sleep. I was like, it's only 8:30. Like, oh shoot. Well, that's a great way to start everything. So Christmas Day, we're supposed to go over to my parents and then go over to Chelsea's parents. My younger brother, Brett, he and his wife are expecting a child soon. And so like
for dinner or like as a weekend guest,
we like to have children over for dinner every other weekend. so his wife Chella is pregnant. And, so don't want to get her sick. And so Christmas morning, Chelsea and Dexter are sick. I'll stop by and drop presents off. I'll be masked. I'm not going to hang out too long. And then Chelsea was like, okay, I'm going to go to my parents. I was like, did you tell them you're sick? She's like, no, you should probably just tell them anyway. And then they're like, we don't care. Come on over. And I was like, I care. I'm not going over. So I did not. It was kind of like a split Christmas. After we did our initial thing in the morning, Chelsea, Dexter, and I. And so it was nice. It was nice. Got some good stuff. I got a Fright Rags horror themed calendar for 2026, which coincidentally I had bought a couple weeks earlier. And it was on the wall when I opened it. She's like, you have that already? I'm like, yeah, it's on the wall currently. It's
right there.
And then the other thing I got, which is really, really cool, is I got Viagra Boys Cave World on vinyl. Very, very cool. Don't tell Chelsea, but when I saw Viagra Boys in October, I bought that vinyl.
Good thing she doesn't listen to this podcast.
I know.
She would find that out.
I know. And
if you do listen, Chelsea, I love you. I listened to the one that you got me, not the one that I bought.
So it was nice. It was nice. It was just, and then Dexter and I basically hung out at the house. We played Baldur's Gate. We started a new Baldur's Gate 3 campaign, the two of us. There is crossplay now. So we could.
You might convince me to purchase it a second time for my PlayStation 5 because I bought it initially for my PC. My PC is old. It's 10 years old. By the second act, my characters were all just T-posing around and it wasn't running properly. So I keep seeing Baldur's Gate for PlayStation and I was like, I can actually play the game. I could play it on there. The thing that keeps holding me back, aside from having to pay another $60, is the fact that I haven't found myself since owning the PlayStation. It's been a year now that I've had it. I don't spend a lot of time in my bedroom in front of the TV playing the PlayStation. It's separated from the rest of the family. I don't want to just everybody's hanging out, I'll just go in the other room and go play on the PS5.
Right.
So what I got for Christmas, which is something I'd been hinting around at, is one of these Backbone controller, phone controller things, which it just snaps, it's expandable, and so you can snap your phone inside of it and then do remote play on the PS5.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can play my PS5 on my phone on this controller. It's not a pro controller because I don't know that they make the pro one for the PS5, but this one will basically it just loads up remote play. And I haven't tried it outside of the house, but with my decent Wi-Fi connection,
mm-hmm.
it's worked pretty good.
Nice.
I tried I didn't want to try a sports game because if there is lag, I didn't want like that to be a factor too much. But one of the reasons I bought the PS5 to begin with is because I'd never owned a PlayStation console before. And there's such a back catalog of beloved games that franchises that people, you know, build their fandoms around.
Yeah, clamor over.
I've never experienced these. So
Spyro the Dragon.
Exactly. You nailed it. I was going through the catalog, the free games I had purchased. I have basically what is like the Xbox Game Pass, but for PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And I had the Final Fantasy VII remake as one of the games that I had free access to. And I was like, oh, I'll check that out. Started playing it. It's pretty fun. It's an interesting game.
Is it the remaster or is it the remake?
Remake.
Okay. So yeah. it's like part one of the remake or whatever.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's very much not turn-based, which is what I expected when I started playing it. I think I can adjust the combat system like that, but it was just something where I was like, oh, I'll experience the story. I'm definitely a person that is not above putting games on easy mode just to experience them. but the fact that Baldur's Gate is crossplay, something I might look into.
And I just looked it up, and because I knew it was crossplay between Xbox or PS5 to the PC, but I didn't know if it was crossplay on platforms. It is in fact crossplay on platforms. So, and I know Dexter is itching to play some Baldur's Gate, and we made it through Act One again. We spent so much fucking time in that game.
Yeah. I was talking to a buddy at work when Baldur's Gate had first come out, and he was so early into the game. I was talking about that, like, first, what is it, like a goblin castle thing that you end up at in Act One or something. Mm-hmm. And he had been playing it for like probably weeks, and he hadn't gotten to that yet. And I was like, what could you possibly be doing in this game? Like, I got to it in the first hour I was playing. What? He's like, I just like looking around, doing side missions, interacting. I was like, I don't think there's that many side missions. Like, but I think he just went a different direction and ended up doing a different thing. And these open world type.
My Facebook algorithm, it's showing me a lot of Baldur's Gate 3 stuff. And it's like, oh shit, I haven't seen that in Act One at all. Like, huh?
Yeah.
You know, so there's like, and I'm like, as I'm going through Act Two now with Dexter, I'm like, man, I know there's stuff that I'm missing. And so it's interesting, but there's also but I know basically the plot lines of all of these things, especially in Act One. So far, but it would be fun, man. It'd be fun to play if you want to make that
for sure.
That leap.
All right. Well, I might have to do that after next weekend.
Yeah.
Because I gotta lock in on my cards for like two more weeks.
Yeah, man.
And then I think I'm gonna take a bit of a mental break from Lorgana a little bit.
Your championship is coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
Yeah. Second weekend in January. So this coming weekend is the start of Set Champs. So local game stores will be hosting championships for the set Whispers in the Well. But during the second week of that is the Disney Lorcana Challenge, the 2000 player event in Richmond, Virginia, which me and my son will be going to.
So
excited for that. Still a little nervous, but just excited to go have fun and participate and try to win some games.
That's awesome. In Las Vegas, the 16th of January, the 17th of January, there is going to be the Punk Rock Museum is in Las Vegas, and it's owned by Fat Mike of NoFX and Fat Records fame. And so that weekend, they're starting the NoFX history tour, and it's guided tours by like people in punk rock. So the drummer from NoFX, Smelly, he is going to be leading the tour on that day. And so I haven't told Chelsea. I bought tickets to go to see that and get, you know, do the NoFX tour with Smelly the drummer. I have a couple of Smelly shirt. He's like he has a surfboard company called Pickle Sticks, and I saw him at like a Punk in the Park show, and he was like selling, you know, shirts and surfboard stuff. And so we talked to him. He's like, you know, like I love drumming, but drumming is not my life. Like it's something I do, but it's not who I am. And then he smacked me in the nuts. And then he smacked Justin in the nuts. I guess that's what he does. But anyways,
that's funny to me, because like you would think professional musicians, like, they love music. That's what they do. That's what their calling is, right? But like we have jobs. You and I have jobs. Mm-hmm. And if people asked us about our jobs, we'd be like, that's not the most interesting thing about me. Like that's I have other hobbies that I enjoy.
You write emails and write awards packages and evaluations for the people who work for you? That's what you do all day?
Yeah, I do, but it's not all that I'm about. And then I smack them in the nuts.
Yeah. And then... and they're like, all right, HR coming for you. let's see. So that's going to be in January, right around the same time as your little competition.
Let's see. My little card game.
I call it little because, you know, you're gonna be a champion. So it's like the competition is gonna be so small, minuscule even. Except your son. Like he'll be really good. Like that he's the one to beat.
If I can make day two, I will have exceeded my own expectations. I was playing with somebody Friday night, who I've known for a while now, and we play at a lot of the same spots. And he's like, "Oh, you and Caleb, you're gonna make day two. Like you guys are definitely good enough to make day two." And I'm like, "Don't say that. I am gonna lose all my games.
You are jinxing me. You are jinx." Yeah,
but I mean. He uses the frame of reference that there's a lot of competitive people in our area. Many of them have gone to these competitions before. A number of them were in day two at the last Disney Lorcana Challenge, the DLC. We play as well, if not, you know, we've beaten them before in tournaments. So, like... with that logic, he's like, yeah, you're about as good as those people who have all made day two, who have 10 years of TCG experience under their belt. Like, I don't know. I'm there to have fun. I'm going to see some people that, you know, I haven't seen in a while, and get to meet a lot of people in the community and stuff like that. So looking forward to all aspects of the weekend. But yeah, I'm sure I'll have a full breakdown for the podcast in a couple of weeks. All right. We talked about video games.
Yeah.
We talked about fun stuff that we're going to do in the next couple of weeks. I want to talk about board games.
Yes.
I do want to talk about some board games.
This is a good segue. So I don't remember what the game is that we got Dexter for Christmas.
Let me see if I can see it in the picture you sent me.
Something Elements.
Command of Nature.
Yeah, there it is. Command of Nature. So Dexter and Chelsea went to Target one day, and then he's like, "Oh, I like that art." And So Chelsea and I went to Target and we got Dexter that for Christmas. So it is a basically a self-contained TCG card game, right?
Like a deck builder type.
It is. Like, yeah. It's got a board, and so like you kind of level up as you kill the other person's characters, and then like you know unlocks abilities and stuff like that. But at the root of it, you have elementals who are your warriors that you play to fight the other people, and then you have like commands, and the commands are like melee attack or ranged attack or swap your characters on your board, stuff like that. And so there's a balance of you want to get commands, because you do want to attack and you want to be able to defend and reduce damage, but you also need to buy character cards so that you have those so you can play those as well. And if you played Slay the Spire, this is the lesson you learn from Slay the Spire is don't buy everything that you see, because when you need to have some level of efficiency in your deck, so where like if you're drawing more cards, you're like, I bought so many fucking cards, I'm now drawing the cards I don't need, right? Okay, so there's four different characters. There's leaf, there's rock, there's water, and then there's twig. Like, I don't know why you have leaf and twig, but...
Twig?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, you know, like, different types of playing styles. So the water is, like, you kind of built towards, like, drawing more cards. The leaf is more of like an attacking type of person. The rock is defense, so like puts shields on things, and then twig like puts boosts on characters. So like the boosts will give them extra damage. So we played it a total of three times. The first night, he was the water, I was the leaf, and I decimated him. I'm like, okay, I see how this goes. Okay, all right, got it.
It's like Pokemon types, like you have advantage.
No,
your stuff is super effective.
No, there's nothing like that. I was like, okay, get the right amount of commands, get the right amount of characters, and like you can like swap the position of your characters, so like some could take damage. There's also abilities on each of the cards. So like I found a synergy where it's like, okay, if I move this card here, then I can draw an extra card. And if I draw an extra card, that means I can move this one back here, which then, you know, triggers this, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. I realized that. I'm like, okay, so that's how I decimated in that one. The second game we played, I was like, okay, I just want to try a different character, see what it's like. I think I chose the twig at this point in time. I chose the water one because he lost with it before. So I was like, let's see if I lose with it. I did not. And actually, we didn't actually finish that game because like right away I was like, I'm going to win. Like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I just see just like the beautiful mind, like, da, 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 da. I'm like, yeah, no, like I'm gonna about to destroy you, right? So then the third game we played, like we didn't finish that play. I'm like, let's stop this. You want to start over again? He's like, yes. So I picked a different character, and I was trying my hardest to lose. I was trying, dude. I'm like he's attacking me, and I like have all these like these cards that like reduce damage. I'm like, yeah, nope, he killed me.
Yeah, really, dang. Really showed me what's up this time.
Damn it. And after all of it, I still won.
Oh no.
And he's like, he didn't say F this game, but he's basically like, damn it. He was so mad. He's like, you just get so lucky on all your cards all the time. And he was unhappy. And then inconsolable for it's a fun game though. It's fun because it's like,
if you're looking for a game that can make your kids very upset, try Command of Nature.
It's fun. And the reason it's fun, like it's, if you are interested in TCGs, trading card games, like it has that aspect of a deck builder where like you want to, like you can see where the synergies are. Like you can play if you're okay with losing from time to time. Right. And that's what I like.
Well, that's a huge part of TCGs in my experience, is being okay with losing sometimes.
like Lorcana, and I think this is why you'd always want me to play Lorcana with you too, is, you know, I think you have some sense that like, I could be good at it if I just gave it
the time. If you just learned how to play it,
gave it the time of day, then I would probably be decent at it.
I would say throughout the course of our friendship, we've played a lot of games together. You have been very good at most, if not all of them. And the thing that I like, so that attracted me to Lorcana was, yes, it is an IP that I am personally fond of, but the mechanics of the game has kept me in it. And it could be anything on these cards, whatever. You could rename every card. You could change the artwork on every card. And if you kept the mechanics the same, it would still be a fun and interesting game to play. And that's what's really kept me in it. If it was just cards with Disney characters on it, like I would not have stuck around so long.
Right.
But it is, there is a lot of interesting strategy, and I guess ultimately I like solving problems, like puzzles and strategic problems is something I enjoy, and that's why I've been drawn to video games and board games that include those types of like things. That's why I enjoy a lot of slightly more complex board games, though I also enjoy like
Uno,
you know, just like Uno, not so much, not as much strategy in Uno, but these unstable games, right? I have not played
Command of Nature.
But I have played a lot of other games by this company. I think it started with Unstable Unicorns was the first game that they came out with.
Okay.
I was gifted that a long time ago, and that's strictly a card game. But that was pretty fun. And then we got, I think we got Happy Little Dinosaurs after that, which is a fun game.
Is that same company? That's that same company?
Same company.
Oh, okay.
Cute little dinosaurs, right? Yeah. Like cute unicorns, cute dinosaurs. Then I got Here to Slay, which again, cute illustrations. Really, the artist is great. but that game was all about all these different like basically D&D classes. Mm-hmm. So you had like a magician, a ranger, like a fighter or something, and you had to like build a class or build a party of all these different classes using all these different cards. That was fun. I enjoyed playing that. So then when I saw this Casting Shadows game, which is what I got for Christmas, again, from Unstable Games, I was like, okay, this looks really interesting because it had hexes, kind of like Catan, right? So I'm like, all right, I'm already kind of in, not even knowing what the hexes were for, but you kind of build this manipulated board. And then everybody has a cute character that can shift into this really awesome looking like shadow character. And the point of this game is you're moving around a map, collecting spells into a spell book, and then you're using those spells to smack the other players in the face. And the point of the game is to be the last one alive. So you're moving around, you're picking up spells, your resources are dice, right? So you roll like five dice at the beginning of your turn, and those are your resources that you have to spend for that round. And then you go around collecting spells and or counter spells that you can play when someone else plays a spell on you. And you kind of build up this spell book of five cards. And then you use those spells along with those resources to do damage to your opponents. And I played it, me, my son, and my brother-in-law played it on Christmas or the day after Christmas. And you know that first time you're playing a board game and you're like reading the rules, you're like, oh, do I have to spend an action point to do this move, or I don't know if, and so you're still kind of stumbling through.
Can I do this in phase one? No, you have to wait for phase three, and then phase four, you reshuffle, but you know. Yeah,
and then somebody does something and you find it in the rule book and you're like, oh, we've been doing that wrong for the last two turns.
We played this entire game and we have been doing it wrong. Every board game, the first time we play it, like that's the experience. Like we've been doing it wrong the entire time.
We stumbled through it, but it was a lot of fun. Caleb actually.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
One, because he got a couple of spells that leveraged a negative thing in the game and turned it into like the mechanism for him to do like a ton of damage to opponents, and he just like kicked our butt. Like he cleared the field. But yeah, I brought it to work today because it's like between Christmas and New Year's, like there's some downtime, so we've been playing a lot of different games like over lunch and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, we should try this out. And so we played a four-player game, all with people that are pretty knowledgeable about like board games and board game mechanics. And it was super fun. It was a lot of fun. Just sort of like the thought processes of what cards to keep, what to kind of exchange for better cards. And you had some players that were like, I'm just going to get a bunch of things that kind of help protect me. But then not have anything that can like deal damage to others. And so everybody else is like dealing damage to each other. And they're just kind of like, along for the ride until the end of the game when it was just me and that other person. And I'm like doing like 8 points of damage every turn. And he's like, heal two. I'm like, yes, the math isn't mathing there, bud. It's just not going to work out.
A war of attrition and you're going to lose.
Yeah. But it's super fun. And so I guess the point in all of this is I'm a big unstable games fan. I think just all of the games that I've played from this company, you can really get into it and buy a lot of accessories and a lot of add-ons and stuff because there's the mechanics. If the mechanics of the game itself was just fun, that'd be great. The fact that the artwork is really enjoyable.
Looks good.
It's kind of cutesy, but it's also like cute in like an edgy way, if that makes any sense.
It does to me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Do you remember going to the booth of the artist from these games at Comic-Con? Like, it was like two or three cons ago. Because I bought that expansion for Here to Slay when we were there. I'm kind of hoping he's at the next con we go to.
Same. Because I really the art for those games is really good. I didn't know anything about Here to Slay or the Happy Dinosaurs game or whatever. Before you, but it makes sense now because you guys basically live at Target, and so like that's
true.
That's where all of the like that dude must have a deal with Target to just like host their games right away.
It's possible. I was just on his website and there are links to buy it on like Amazon, the website, and Target. Like those were all options of how to find the game. So I already bought an expansion for Casting Shadows, because it the base game is a 4-player game. And so I was talking about those hex tiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
You place each one of the, there's 3 like main hexes that are the center of the board, and those are stationary. Those are always in those positions. But then the other 4 are related to the characters. So you place them around the board based on who's going first and like the turn order. So the board itself is different each game depending on who's playing or the order of play. And then when you get the expansion, it adds 2 additional characters, so you can play with 6. So it expands the board as well, and you can add those tiles for the other players as well. So yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes. I'll let you know next week when I play it again.
At a game night in November, we played Creepy Cryptids. I think that's what it's called.
Is that another unstable game? I think it might be.
Is it? Creepy Cryptids. Creepy Cryptids. Board game.
Twisted Cryptids.
Twisted Cryptids. Is it them?
It is. It totally is.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you know?
Welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm, the Unstable Games fan cast.
Jeez, yeah. So that was a fun game. I played that one, obviously. The first time I ever played.
Obviously.
I won.
Obviously, right? You should try Lorcana.
And we played a different game that night, too, and I won that, too. I can't help it. I can't help but win all the time.
Don't hurt yourself patting yourself on the back.
But kind of joking about that, but also I think about people who are smart, who are like, they figure out like math equations, and they're like, they sit in front of like a book, and they're like a notebook, and like figuring it out. Right. I don't know if this is how it is for you. There's just something about like seeing the rules and then like seeing everything laid out. And it's like, no, I understand what's happening. I don't know how I understand it. I know what I need to do to get to the point where I'm going to win. are you like that?
I do have a tendency to think a little bit ahead, right? So I'll, as an example today, I saw one player was being very aggressive with the damage he was dealing. So, and I was like, all right, I need to take him out like immediately, or he's going to get ahead of everybody and just kind of overwhelm us. And so took him out and was like, I don't have to worry about these other ones because they're not playing as aggressively and I'll have time. And so then by the time it was like just me and one other player, I was like, yeah, I think if I do this on this turn and then this on the next turn, at that point, I'm good. Like, so I don't know. Like I see, especially when you're playing a lot of TCGs, I think you look for combos, you look for ways to use cards together to kind of, gain that advantage for sure.
It's weird to me because I'm not trying to figure it out. It's just like, oh, this makes sense, right? And like, sure. I was talking to our mutual friend Ryan McGovern about music, and you know, like he and I are both like, we're not classically trained musicians. We both like playing music. We both play guitar, and him and I both are like, we just, I don't know what we're playing. We don't necessarily know the chords we're playing, or like, is this in the key of whatever? Which, like,
yeah,
okay, yeah, no, this sounds good. This just makes sense how this sounds good. this works out right. It's just weird how like those connections in your brain happen, and it's such an intangible thing for me, I think, is what the weird thing is.
Well, and I think part of it is just when you spend a lot of time doing something, aspects of it can become like second nature. Like, you've played an instrument for a very long time. You've played lots of instruments, like, or dabbled in lots of different types of making music. So then you're like, okay, this I'd play it like this, and then this goes together with this, and then, oh, if I add this, like, it just, I couldn't do that to for the life of me. Like, when you're like, oh, I threw this song together today, and you send me like multi parts of a song all like put, and I'm like, geez, I was on Instagram for like an hour. Ugh.
It took me like 8 hours to do that, and like to like 2 to 3 in the morning, where I'm like, okay, I really gotta go to sleep now. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll grind out, you know, a bunch of games for Lorcana or something, and then be like, oh, I could see how if they put this card and that card out, like, I can't see their hand, but I have a very good idea of what possible cards are in their hand and what they could be trying to do. So I'll do this, and hopefully that,
and,
you know,
and
helps me out.
And on that note, like, it's probably, especially when you're playing against people who know what they're doing, you have a good sense of, if they're playing this, they're playing these couple of cards this way, I know that they probably have this type of deck that they're playing with.
Oh yeah.
Which means they're trying to go for this. What do I have in my hand right now that can counteract or mitigate or like undercut them to fuck them up to what they're trying to do. And at the same time, you're like, and I know that they are thinking about how they can do that because they know what my deck is. And so yeah, like,
that's honestly why I keep going back and forth about, do I take a couple of these cards out of my deck and put in this like really infrequently used card just to kind of like throw in that spice and be like, hey, I'm expecting you to play this next. And if I play something else, does that give me an advantage because it's a surprise, or does it set me back because it's not the most strategically optimal card to play on that turn or whatever? So, the metagaming of like knowing the cards in the set, know what the powerful cards in the set are, know what color combinations and what kind of things people play and what that mindset might be, to where until you like sit down across from an opponent and they like ink their first card, play their first card, you may not have any idea even what colors they're playing. So, so like that first turn is all about, okay, what does this person have? What colors are they playing? How do I respond to that? And then, you know, games two and hopefully game three, depending on if you go first or second, is all about adapting to that and making those adjustments based on what you learned in game one and things like that.
So, question on Lorcana tournament rules. So you have an opponent, you meet your opponent, you have your deck, and then they have their deck. Yep. You have to play that deck the entire three games.
So you show up to a tournament with a deck.
Okay.
Singular.
All right.
In other card games, Magic the Gathering, I think even like Yu-Gi-Oh might have been this way, you can have sideboards, which is a handful, I don't know the specific number, of additional cards that are part of your deck, but they are out of your deck, right?
Like you can substitute them in between games.
And you can swap those out with cards. So that's something my brother-in-law, who longtime Magic player, he's like, there's no sideboards at all in Lorcana. And it like really threw him, because he was thinking about in his first game the changes he would make to his deck to adjust for a second game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can't do that. You bring a registration sheet with your 60 cards, 60 plus cards, depending on if you like to live dangerously or not. And then that is the 60 cards you play with throughout the tournament. So, yeah, there's no changing, which is a limitation. Sure. Like you can't make adjustments. But I feel like that limitation is also, you know, a benefit because
that makes you, it's a kind of a crutch, right? Like it's like, okay, sure. This makes me need to optimize my 60 cards as much as I can for any kind of variation that I'm going to experience throughout the tournament.
And I've talked about it before, but like in the last set when I was playing a color combination that I don't typically play, that was really aggressive and tried to win very quickly. That play style is not something I typically enjoy because it was very kind of formulaic. And like I had to find the right cards in the deck. So I'm playing like four copies of everything because I want to find a copy of specific cards early in the game. I want to flood my board very quickly and just start questing and gain points like before my opponent can establish their game plan. Mm-hmm. It was very linear. There were aspects to it where I had to be very aware of what my opponent could do and like what the threats were so that I could deal with them and decide to make my cards vulnerable or not, depending on what they had. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it certainly wasn't a control deck. It wasn't a deck where I could, you know, try to control my opponent's board if they were doing something I didn't want them to do, which is typically the play style I prefer to play.
Yeah.
So I played it. It worked. I mean, I won a set champs at a local store because the deck was really good and it did what it was supposed to do. But at the same time, by the time I was done with it, I was like, all right, I don't want to play this anymore. I tried it one time with the new set and I was like, I don't like.
That's not your style. That's not what you get.
There are other decks that I'm aware of right now that have that same sort of thing where it's just like they want to become the problem. I'm gonna put a bunch of cards out that you have to deal with, and if you can't deal with it, I'm gonna win. But there's no interaction from their side of the table. It's like I'm just gonna play out all these cards. I'm gonna try to draw a bunch of cards. I don't care what you do on that side of the table. I'm just trying to get all these cards out as quickly as possible to get to 20 points before you can do anything to my cards or get to 20 points yourself.
Yeah.
Those are interesting matchups because like then like my deck tries to go pretty fast and can go pretty fast. But if I'm against an opponent like that, I have to interact. I have to do things to slow them down. So yeah, I don't know. It's those problems. Like every time you sit down at a table against an opponent, especially if you have no idea what they're playing, you're like, okay, let's see what this new puzzle is and then figure out how we're going to use the 60 pieces of cardboard that I brought with me to deal with it.
In between games, when you're not playing, other people are still playing, are you going around and being like
scouting, yeah, like a boss? Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's one thing because like if you're playing a lot in an area, it doesn't matter what store I go to around Oklahoma City. Like I see most of the same faces,
right?
Like it's rare, especially just like on a weekly, you know, normal event, to like see anybody new. There are definitely people that only play at certain stores, you know, or they only play on certain nights or on the weekends. But for the most part, after several weeks, like, hey, there's so-and-so, they play, you know, a red purple deck. There's so-and-so, they play a green blue deck and they spend a ton of money and have it blinged out with all foil cards and all enchanteds and, you know, have, you know, money or something. But I'm showing up on Saturday to a set championship at this store. I can look on my phone and see who has already signed up to be at that event. And I can be like, all right, this person is going to bring this deck. this person's going to bring this deck. I don't know that name. So I don't know who that person is or what they're going to bring. But then I know the other two people. So I can already start to kind of plan in my head, like, here's the likelihood of what types of decks I'm going to see at an event. That's fine for locals.
Yeah.
But when you go to like a 2,000 player event that is one of three in North America and people are literally traveling from Europe to come to this event, that's where knowing what the people in your area play is great, but that's where you have to really start to understand the global meta and look at tournaments, like tournament results from around the world, and start to see percentages of people are playing this combo, percentages are playing this. The likelihood of me seeing certain decks is X, and then just kind of hope you see the ones you match up well against and not the ones you're bad at.
The question I want to ask you, Travis, is,
yeah,
you have won a couple of these tournaments locally. Is there a fear in your heart that you've won because you know the people that you're playing against versus people that you've never played against? When you go to Worlds or whatever.
Especially because the set champs I won, I was in a finals against someone who I don't normally play against.
Okay.
Yes, they were playing a deck that I'm relatively familiar with, but even they were playing some different cards that, you know, were a variation from the standard of what a lot of people run in that deck.
Okay. All right.
I feel like I'm decent at the game. I'm above average, I think, because at least for my area, right? I play on a website that will remain nameless on this podcast because they don't want to get taken down by Disney. But my win percentage on there is above 50%, which, like, 55% is decent. Like, to you want to be above 55 or higher. But people average in, like, because one thing about Lorcana is the dice roll, the determination of who goes first can have a big impact on the game.
Yeah.
Whoever goes first in game one, it's kind of like holding serve, right? In tennis. Like, if I'm serving first, I have an advantage. And even if you get to go first the second game because I won, well, then I'm going to go first again in the third game because you won the second game. And so then, like, me getting to go first twice, I'm almost like a half a turn ahead of you every time I'm playing. So it's, if we just laid out cards and turned them sideways and never interacted with each other, I'm likely to get to 20 before you do. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of conversation in the game about the importance of the dice roll and going first and how that matters. So yeah, I don't remember what my point was with that.
It factors into it.
That is
not just because you know the people that you're beating while you're winning, because you're good.
And people change, like, people
seasons change.
Play a deck for one set, and then they're like, okay, I'm done with this. I want to try something different, and then they change from week to week depending on people and yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, that was our Lorcana.
That was a long Lorcana minute. But it's, I mean, that's what it is.
So. Yeah. That's good. Interesting. It's probably the most interested I've been in Lorcana, basically in like the last year. So that was good. That's good. I think last time we talked about Stranger Things and, did we?
We mentioned it.
Yeah. So the second half came out, and then the last
spoiler free.
Spoiler free. this is my impression of Stranger Things. Because I compared it to, that's right, I compared it to It, Welcome to Derry. As like, It was a better show. Here's my impression of every problem that's in Stranger Things. All right. So they're like, oh no, I don't know what to do about Vecna. Oh, what's going to happen? What do we do? I don't know what we're supposed to do. And then somebody's like looking around the room. They're like, there's a door over there. What if the door, I got it. The door is how we get into the upside down to find Vecna. Oh yeah. Oh, and they're like, okay, that resolves that episode. Next episode. I don't know what we're going to do. What are we going to do now? Oh shoot. Oh geez. That girl is wiping down the table. What if Vecna is wiping down the table of the upside down? And that's, you're right. Yeah, let's do that. Resolved. Next episode. And like that is like every fucking episode of the show where it's like they find
specifically the new season, or yeah. Do you feel that's true of like the show in general?
It might be the show in general, but definitely the latest season, where like every yeah. episode there is a resolution that is found from like seeing something mundane, and then it's like, how does this mundane thing apply to how they're solving a problem with Vecna and the upside down and everything going on? That is the most like trite, contrived thing for me for the show. A lot of people have an issue with
it's just because they're so good at fighting the upside down for so long that they see the patterns, they see the clues. It's the same puzzle solving we've been talking about all episode, Brandon.
I wish that were the case. Yeah, no, it would make sense. A lot of people like you probably saw this. There's in spoiler free, but a lot of people have already posted this out there with memes and stuff like that about,
and I skip it. I skip them. I don't even look.
The Will character, there's a scene where like he comes out to all of his friends, right?
The upside down, right? Because he was trapped in the upside down and he comes out of it.
Got it. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, okay, he's coming out of the upside down. Ooh, why is this important? And like, people latch onto that as like why the season is not good. I'm like, that's an important part of the show. That's an actual good part of the show. And that the actor who plays Will Byers does a phenomenal job. Like during that particular scene that people are up in arms about, Travis, I don't say this lightly. I don't cry for things, right? But I actually wiped away a tear at that monologue. Like it.
Ooh, okay.
It actually hit me. And I'm like, the people who are bitching about it, like, you're a bunch of fucking assholes. because that it was just, a really, really well acted, and I think that the actor is gay in real life. So like just made it that much more powerful. That's not the problem with the show. The problem with the show is shitty writing and pacing. Anyway,
sorry, Duffer Bros.
Yeah. But, hey, well, the finale's tomorrow.
My family is actually they're probably binge watching Stranger Things right now so that, we can eventually catch up and start season 5. Probably won't get to it this year, but next year,
yeah,
we'll binge watch the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, so. we'll talk about the finale next week. I did the last thing I did watch was One Battle After Another, Leonardo DiCaprio movie that directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who did There Will Be Blood. It's on HBO Max right now. It's gotten, I guess, rave reviews. It's got Sean Penn, Leo DiCaprio, and Benicio del Toro, and it's a good movie. The first like 20 30 minutes is like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through this. But then it like it ramps up and it turns out to be a pretty good movie. Sean Penn plays a fantastic asshole. It's decent. It's decent. DiCaprio, all right. not great, but he acts well, but he's like not the highlight of the movie for me. So I did enjoy it, but I think that it's like a,
what was it called again?
One Battle After Another.
Okay. Period piece. War movie.
No, it's like, well, I guess kind of war. Yeah. It like, it seems fairly
the war within ourselves.
What's it yeah. called? Like timeless. It seems like it's like modern. Right. DiCaprio, him and this woman are like revolutionaries.
You say it's a hyperkinetic thrill ride that surprisingly never loses momentum?
Yes. Did they steal my words? That's what I was going to say.
Somebody said that on Reddit. I guess.
And then eventually, there's a kid involved, and then DiCaprio, like it jumps like 16 years in the future, and then he's kind of like a washed out revolutionary. And then that's where the story really, really starts.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, check it out. Oh,
I watched Zootopia too.
Did you watch Knives Out, the new Knives Out?
No. Nah.
Wake Up Dead Man? Oh, but you love... Oh, you're a heist man. You're not a murder mystery man.
I do. I liked all the other Knives Out movies. I'll watch it. Brandon, I told you, I've been watching live streams of Lorcana players. That's all the content I consume right now.
Let me repeat this. Wake up, dead man. It is the third movie from Rian Johnson in the Knives Out series. He wasn't a big
verse or whatever.
Yeah, he wasn't a big fan of calling it Knives Out movies, but yeah, Wake Up Dead Man is the third one. It's my least favorite of all of them, but it is still a good movie. It's still a really good movie.
I need to. This is what I meant when I said I'm going to take a bit of a step back from competitive Lorcana after Richmond, because I'm still going to play Lorcana. I'm still going to play it every week, but the like grinding out games on my computer, the like looking up YouTube content of people talking about decks and like watching live streams of people playing, like I'm going to take a break. I'm going to watch a bunch of movies that I haven't been watching. I'm going to, you know, binge watch a show and then go play cards on the weekend and have fun for the hour or two that I do that. But I'm hyper fixated right now because of the big event that I'm going to.
Yeah.
And I know for me, I'm not going to be somebody that's like going to every large event and like traveling regularly for tournaments. So, whatever we can do in my local area, all for it. This is a fun exception. I think for me and my son, you know, unless one of us just hits a hot streak and gets an invite to nationals and then, It's all downhill from there. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
My 1 minute synopsis of Zootopia 2, my review.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is a movie that heavily
snakes.
Relies on the fact that it's a sequel.
Hmm.
So it does not, I don't know if it's that aspect or what, but the pacing of a specifically a sequel sometimes feels weird to me, where I feel like they haven't established the situation enough before they get into the problem.
Mm.
Right. Like they just like a lot of sequels will just assume, you know, the main characters, you know, the world that's been built, you know, what's going on. 5 minutes in, let's start dealing with an issue or something. And so then the rest of the movie, I just feel like off on the pacing, where I'm like, are we already into the main, like, problem? Like, is this the plot, or what's happening? And then they introduce a new character like 30 minutes in and you're like, wait, are we still establishing things or is this what's happening? So I just had that weird sense throughout. The jokes are funny. The animation is awesome. And by the end, like the story is great and it's very good. High quality Disney animation. But yeah, that was my only one thing where I was like, I think it was like 45 minutes into the movie and I'm like, is it almost over? Did it just start? What's that? And it may be because I watched it between Christmas and New Year's and time doesn't actually exist in this weird Twilight Zone that we're in. But
marathon starts
with that
tomorrow.
Said, that ends our 4-hour episode of Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Let us know if you're watching on YouTube. Leave us a comment about anything and everything that we talked about. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we promise to reply to most of them. And if you're listening to this on a podcatcher of your choice, rate, review, 5 stars always helps us out. And we'll talk to you next week, I guess.
Yeah, I think we will in 2026. Yeah. Let me just say, yeah,
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Tomorrow on the 31st, the Twilight Zone marathon starts. So turn on your...
Will this podcast be released before the marathon starts? That is the real question.
Yes. Yeah, I'll release. I'll release it tonight. I don't have to work tomorrow, so.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I do. I have to go to work.
Submitted for your approval. All right. Anyways,
Twilight Zone podcast. Go listen to Submitted for Your Approval. Happy New Year, everybody. See you in 2026.
See you later. Bye.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.